It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. We're Eric. He's Eric Harley. Not were.
I don't think
he is.
I don't think we are both Eric.
Well, Harley. Unless that's the new pronoun we're taking, were.
Yeah, maybe.
He's Eric Harley. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you.
My pronouns are hey and you.
We should come up with some pronouns. The funniest one I saw was one, you know, there's a guy and it just shows a name tag and it says Michael Jackson and it's he he.
His pronouns are he he. That's a good one. Yeah. Usually it's either dork or doofus. I'll let you choose.
All right. Senator Joe Manchin's favorability ratings are in a free fall since striking a deal with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to pass a reconciliation bill. There's a YouGov poll finding that just 12% of the that 12% of Americans believe the bill dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act would actually reduce inflation. But the polling for Manchin is also brutal. It finds that 51% of registered voters now have an unfavorable opinion of him compared to just 21% who have a favorable view. In the same poll last month, Manchin was nearly even with 34% favorable and 35% favorable. It has gone down a lot, 29 points. That's nationwide. This is not a poll of West Virginia. Be interesting to see how he does there. But you and I said from the very beginning, we didn't understand the bill. We didn't understand where the victory was. And you don't hear as, where's the House on? That's what I was looking for. I'm sitting here, I'm going through. I didn't get much sleep last night.
I mean,
one of those days.
Also, the news is really, the stories and all of this is changing. It's morphing by the moment. And so things are kind of not in the regular order.
No, they're not, because I'm looking, is anybody covering, you know, where's the House here on the, make inflation greater bill? You didn't really see any stories on it yesterday.
Yeah.
It's like, well, where are they on this? And some of the things that have come out about it, and we brought it to your attention yesterday, that the automobile manufacturers of electric cars in the United States said, this bill does the opposite. You're giving money so people will buy electric vehicles, but you put so much regulation on it that 70% of the vehicles that we manufacture right now will not qualify for the subsidies. Our prices are skyrocketing because of the price of electric batteries. You put a low end of $55,000 that if your car isn't under $55,000, it does not get a subsidy.
Right.
And which means we cannot sell the majority of our vehicles and get the subsidies. And so we can sell it. And it's the same time that the New York Times put the article out saying, well, even with the subsidies, doesn't matter. Only the rich buy electric vehicles.
Right.
That came from the New York Times. And so you look at this, and so there has to be some panic inside of the House.
By the way, Pelosi said Wednesday evening that the House will pass it on Friday. So later today, it's expected it will pass the House, according to Pelosi.
Yeah, I just haven't heard. Wow, remember on some of the bills before when they said they're going to...
Yeah.
What was remember, it seemed to be every single week. Well, there's going to be a vote on it this Friday, and then there wasn't a vote. I just haven't heard anything on what the debate is, because that's a huge thing. Where of the electric car vehicle, the electric car vehicle manufacturers came out and said, you put a bill that's supposed to help us, and it hurts us.
Well, and, you know, there are at least a couple of Democrats who are vulnerable that say they don't plan to vote, you know, for it. But, you know, I guess we'll see.
They need every vote, because I did see another story saying every single Republican in the House will not vote for it.
Hmm.
They don't have one vote in the House.
Right.
And now the analysis is coming after last week saying, well, maybe because the public doesn't believe, and we told you the numbers, only 21% in the polling that was done yesterday or the day before, only 21% of Democrats believe that this actually solves inflation. And when inflation is the biggest problem, and you promote the fact, and you celebrate the fact, and you take victory laps when it hasn't even passed yet, when it passes the Senate, that the Inflation Act is, the stop or the lower reduce inflation act has passed the Senate, and only 21% of Democrats believe it will actually reduce inflation, and you're getting killed 3 months before an election. It might be better if the Senate, if it didn't get passed in the House and it disappears. It doesn't do any political, I don't see any of the political good that it does the Democrats at all. None.
No, because it's already been eviscerated, which might have been the saving grace in its trip between the Senate and the House, right? Mm-hmm. For the Democrats, politically, it's like, okay, the media just tore it down, and then the story about the EVs. The story about the EVs is the one that really hits home, because it's like, well, it doesn't. And the mainstream media, CNBC, NBC News, they were on that story. And the majority of EVs on the market won't be covered by it. Some that are covered by the tax credit now won't be covered when the law is passed.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
They're taking a step back in that regard, and it could be that, all right, but here's the problem.
70% of the vehicles produced right now will not be covered under the Democrat plan.
But here's the problem, though. If you don't pass it, all of this that happened, pseudo celebration of it passing in the Senate and the media praising it, you know, all that's gone. And this whole idea of Brandon and getting another victory because he's signing something into law, that's gone too. Or do you sacrifice that and say, we're not going to be able to withstand the scrutiny? Because here's the difference, okay? Keep in mind that it is still, I mean, the House is going to vote on it, but the House members are still campaigning in their home districts.
And so you have three things. First off, the public believes taxes will be raised because the CBO and the JCT, Joint Commission on Taxation, both came out and said it raises taxes. This is one of the first, I'm trying to think if this is the first time. You got to find the little victories out there somewhere as to what's changing. It may not be changing what's going on in Congress, but is it slowly changing public opinion? This is the first time that Democrats that I, maybe there's a time I forgot, but I don't think there is. This is the first time that Democrats have not been able to convince the American public and sell it that corporate taxes don't affect you.
Right. Yeah.
The biggest tax lie that Democrats have told since I've been doing talk radio for 33 years and even longer than that is we tax the corporations because then we will make them pay their fair share because you're paying your fair share and they're not paying their fair share. Yet the reality is they pass it on to you or their employees or their shareholders.
Yep.
And who gets hit, who, as we know with gasoline, who gets hit every time their costs go up?
It's the poor and the middle class.
The poor and the middle class. The consumer is the one that gets hit because they're always going to be able to raise taxes. And if you raise taxes across the board, then everybody has to raise taxes. Mm-hmm. Because then that's what they do, because, all right, everybody's been taxed. Okay, we all raise our prices. And the JCT came out and clearly said that, as did the CBO. That's amazing, because that hasn't happened. You and I can remember the fights that we would have. I remember that you would have Democrats out there, because there were a lot of fights about raising the minimum wage. And the fact is, well, if you raise the minimum wage, you actually tax, that's an increase in taxes because the companies pass it on. And what the Democrats used to say at that point is, well, no, they won't. And our response would be, well, you're saying that if you raise the cost for greedy companies, and you're raising, if you raise taxes on companies, not the cost, but if you raise taxes on companies because they're greedy, you're saying they're not going to pass it on to their customers.
They're going to stop being greedy.
Because they've stopped being greedy at this particular point. And everybody knows that doesn't make any type of sense. So they lost the tax argument. So they're taxing people, and the majority of Americans believe they're being taxed higher under this plan. Landslide numbers across the board, including landslide numbers of Democrats, don't believe that it reduces inflation. And then on the left, for the little nice little tidbit wrapped in a bow for the left is, oh, this bill that's supposed to make it so we sell more electric vehicles. Well, currently, 70% of the electric vehicles produced right now will not get any of these tax subsidies, and therefore there will be fewer electric vehicles that are sold than currently. So this bill does the opposite of what you wish it to do. What is the high point of this bill that they've been able to sell? There isn't anything. So everybody's really quiet on it. And I know the Trump story is dominating everything, but still, I just wonder how it'll be a couple of votes, but you know as well as I do. Think about this. You know, Manchin's gone quiet on it, right? He's not talking much about it. It's over. He sees the poll numbers. He knows, and we said he would get killed by it. He got killed. His favorability numbers, at least nationwide, way down. If West Virginia is as conservative as they say, I can't expect the numbers to go up for him on this particular bill. He was horribly weak in selling it. He knew a couple of days into it that he agreed to a bad deal. You could tell. You could see him. I saw him. You could see the perspiration on his face. You could see it, that he was sweating. He couldn't defend it, because everything that he had said before, he just tossed away.
Yeah.
And everyone knows it. So he couldn't sell it. And so here's where we are now. And I know that you've got here these House members in vulnerable districts who now are going to have to sit there and say, my God, you're forcing me to pass this bill. I'm only 5 points behind the Republican, and you are telling me that I've got to vote for this bill.
I've got to lay down. Yeah.
That the public believes, and I've done my own polling. My constituents believe it's going to raise taxes and does nothing for inflation.
If you're in one of those districts, that's exactly what you're facing. And Fox News Digital reported on Tuesday they reached out to the 20 most vulnerable Democrats, and none of them responded on whether or not, how they're going to vote. It could be that they're just not going to respond to Fox. It could be. Or it could be that right now they're having a problem. And so here's the makeup. 5 vacancies in the House, so that puts it at 220 Democrats, 210 Republicans. If it's accurate that no Republicans will vote, they can't lose 10 votes. The Democrats can't lose half of those 20 vulnerable Democrats. They're going to have to have at least 11 of them on board. You can't lose 10. It's 220 to 210 right now.
And what's your sell if you're Nancy Pelosi?
Get it done? I don't know. I mean, honestly.
Take one for the team, increase taxes, and do nothing about inflation? Because this isn't just rhetoric going back and forth. This is what the polls are showing. America doesn't buy that the Reduce Inflation Act reduces inflation.
Right.
And that's landslide number of Democrats. 80% of Democrats don't believe that it reduces inflation.
Right. And on the EV thing, my gosh. You don't win anywhere.
And you're raising taxes during a recession, during stagflation.
Right. There's not a win.
That's why we had our normal perverted sense of awe when the Democrats were out promoting this. Whoa, we great victory, great victory, great victory, great victory.
Well, the vote is today. See if they can get it done.
866-90-RED-EYE.
With diesel fuel at $5 per gallon in some places, it can really take a toll on your bottom line every time you fill up. To combat these prices, use a high-quality fuel additive that can not only improve your fuel economy on average to more than pay for the product, but also protect your truck. Look for a fuel additive that is fully formulated, like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment. This 6-in-1 treatment turns your standard pump diesel into premium diesel by increasing cetane, lubricity, cleans fuel injectors, protects against moisture, and more. All of these benefits will increase your performance, increasing fuel economy, so that the savings will not only pay for the cost of the product, but also keep more money in your pocket. Hotshot's Secret EDT will increase fuel economy up to 3%. That's an extra 45 miles per tank, $37 worth of diesel, and a savings of 2 cents every mile on average. Protect your bottom line, protect your truck, and stay on the road with a premium diesel treatment like Hotshot's Secret Everyday Diesel Treatment.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to William in Illinois about Mar-a-Lago, the nuclear vessels. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Star Trek there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to William in Illinois. William, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, good morning, family. Hey. Got a quick question for you. All right. Should not the people that are making these false accusations about our former president be held liable? That's my first only question, but I have one more comment after that. If you, me, or anybody else made false accusations, you'd be held liable in court. Okay. You know,
well,
right?
it depends on the nature of what you're saying, and also depends on the person.
Yeah. You'd have to be more specific. What specific allegation should Trump be able to sue him?
They're lying about him doing everything for the last
You have to be specific.
Right. If you're going to, in a court setting, you're going to have to say, okay, we charge that they were saying that they were making this claim and everything else. And then, of course, being a former president and a public figure, there are things that wouldn't apply.
It's almost impossible
to sue. And again,
yeah.
Depending on what you're saying, right, what accusations you're making directly.
Is in place. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. To the last caller, just so you know, because you say, can Trump sue? Remember, Trump has filed a civil suit against the Hillary campaign and 26 other people. And he's filed it not under in civil court defamation, but under the it's a civil suit that you can use from the RICO Act. Now, I don't know if he has any chance in doing it. We always thought it was a unique legal concept that he came up with. And this is where he can say he has been, because of all the lies that have been put out about him, that his businesses have been damaged by technically a racketeer, an enterprise that existed, which would be the Hillary campaign and tying everything in. Even though Michael Sussman wasn't found guilty, for example, he still, you can make the case in civil court, he still lied in order to destroy you, but destroying you politically by financing and creating a lie, and that enterprise to destroy you also helped to destroy your businesses. And what he's looking at is really like for $24 million in legal fees.
Right.
He wants to get the legal fees paid for it. And, you know, because of that, because that has caused him, because of what they put upon him, he has personally been damaged, not as a politician. This isn't a defamation lawsuit. And so it's unique in the fact that when you and I saw this, we went, whoa, this is really interesting. Because this is an enterprise with a group of people, and you don't necessarily have to commit a crime in that enterprise to be found guilty in the civil suit and have to pay damages. That was the unique part of it.
Right.
So when it comes to defamation, it's almost impossible when you're a president of the United States, because everybody's going to tell lies about you.
Well, and if you say, are we going to hold them liable, then we go back to the political effect of it all. And it, while it may not affect politically a Merrick Garland, maybe it will, I don't know. It depends on, I guess, his future aspirations. But could it affect a number of things along the way with the current president and the Democrats? And could it boost, if you're looking for Trump to run in 24, could it boost his leverage? And I think the answer to all of those is, yeah, quite possibly. And so that's the, again, what happens politically, the fallout there. It is, now, it's not to say that along the way, and I'm not making any specific allegations here, but it's not to say along the way that they couldn't find at some point an abuse of power. And then an abuse of power would have to apply to whoever you're talking about, which individual you're talking about. And then they could apply that and pursue it again. It would require people in those prosecutorial positions to do that.
That'd be impeachment or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a abuse of power isn't...
Right.
Isn't a criminal charge.
Right. And that was the point I was getting to, was that it's not going to get to a court, but that's the closest you could get. You're not going to get to a likely get to a criminal level on any of this. But an abuse of power, could it be found along the way? Yeah. Could there be? And then could there be even for on like an impeachment for a sitting president, but then also any kind of disciplinary things that may come down along the way? But those aren't going to be. That's not going to send anybody. None of that will send anybody to prison.
No, nobody's going to go to prison. It's defamation lawsuits are all civil lawsuits, but. What's really interesting about the RICO civil suit, when we saw that, we went, whoa. We went to the RICO statute and looked at it. We go, my God, it does exist, where you can file the civil suit. And all you have to prove, nobody has to break the law. All you have to prove is that there's an enterprise of people cooperating together and you know, cooperating together to help destroy you, and it causes damage to your business or property. For example, if they sit there and politically they set you up where you lose and have to pay a tremendous amount of lawyer fees, well, the enterprise itself, and that would be everybody in the Hillary campaign knowing what they were doing, knowing that they were transferring money to Perkins Coie, knowing that, you know, Michael, and you can make the case that, you know, that Hillary Clinton, that everybody who served in her upper management, the people at Perkins Coie, the people at you know, you can make the, I don't know how far you get with it, but you can make the case that they were all part of the enterprise, mm-hmm. all parts of it, because you can tie one to the other. And the only purpose of all the people in that group was to destroy Donald Trump politically. Now, if you just have that enterprise that exists to get opposition research and you tell the truth about someone, but what makes this unique, and I don't believe, because in the analysis of it, I've never seen that this has ever been used by a politician before, but we've never seen what has happened before. The Hillary campaign clearly had what you could call an enterprise. They're a group of people cooperating together to destroy somebody politically by financing and creating lies about them. And that's the difference. You had money that was flowing to help create the lies and to create the lies and then market the lies. And then you had other parts of the enterprise, which you could say was Michael Sussman, for example, who was supposed to go to law enforcement and sell that lie. And then when law enforcement covered it, well, then the enterprise continued and went to the media and promoted the lie to the media. And then it came all the way back in a big circle where that campaign then would look and say, see, Trump is colluding with the Russians, and here's the evidence because the FBI is doing the investigation. Or you can look at the enterprise was a Hillary campaign, Perkins Coie, Fusion GPS, Iggy Danchenko, whose trial's coming up in October, and they were all involved in creating the fake dossier and selling it to the FBI, which then got a secret warrant, but that started all of Trump's troubles, and any type of personal private loss that he had, which most likely was the lawyer fees that he's looking for, that's personal damage. You're damaging someone. It's not the political damage you do to them. It is the financial damage that you do to them by having that enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It sounds really, when I say it, it sounds like, whoa, there's a chance. I don't know what in civil court would knock that out and say, sorry, Gary, you're missing this part and it can't go. But it sounds really good because all of it, if it's focused on not a defamation, but what you did damaged me monetarily.
Right.
Then it's not even political. It's not even political damage or defamation damage. It's actual business and property. And your property is your money.
Yeah.
And if you have to pay lawyer fees, you can make the case. How far will it go? I don't know. But doesn't it sound good?
Mm. Well, and, you know, again, it'll be interesting to watch Trump's lawyers were asking for the next hearing date to be moved. It's set now for May of on that case of next year, and he wanted it moved. They wanted it moved to November of 23, and the judge said no. They're not going to move it because the request was because they said there's way too much evidence here to go through, and they need more time. But it's set for May 8th of 23, the trial is, and then they wanted it moved to November of 23. So,
sorry, you're talking about Danchenko?
No, talking about Trump's lawsuit.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's, right. I mean, do you need until November 2023? I don't know. And because honestly, here's the thing. If you sit down and start talking about all of what happened, you might be asking the judge to move it to November of 2029.
Well, why? Here's my thing, because I don't think this has ever been attempted before. So why why hasn't the judge thrown it out? What I just said, how I explain the entire thing, is that actually a legit legal example of how the Civil RICO Act can be used? It seems like it is, because there was that enterprise. And by the way, part of the RICO predicate offenses is fraud. Well, you are technically committing fraud by financing a lie and selling a lie. That would be the civil fraud that exists. We are committing fraud by financing to come up with dirt that isn't true and then sell it to others to destroy you. You still, none of that, if they just went and criticized him and it didn't go to through the legal process where he had to hire lawyers, then there's no damage. But because he had to hire lawyers to defend himself, that's where the damage comes in.
By the way, there have been a number of motions to dismiss, which could have the court throw this thing out. If they're granted that motion, any of the motions to dismiss, then there won't be anything happening in May,
right?
Next year. So.
I guess the thing is they filed it in March, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're to August, and you would just think that something like this, if they thought there was nothing to it, that it would be had been thrown out by now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know in a civil case if there is any different consideration. And I also don't know, you know, we don't know the details on these motions to dismiss. So, yeah. We'll see.
But it's interesting. So, yeah, in a way you can sue, but for defamation, when you're a public figure and the president is the ultimate public figure.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so you can call him a lot of things. Now, here's where you get when you talk about malice. If you know something is completely false and you call somebody, if you call a public figure in general a rapist, but there isn't a particular incident, it probably is a lot harder to sue a public figure if you do that than if you say he raped John Doe,
mm-hmm.
or Jane Doe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if he raped Jane Doe, then you're making a specific criminal allegation, which if you know is false, that's where the malice comes in, because you know it's false. And at that point, you have a much better chance of suing.
What's interesting here is there are 29 defendants in June. The plaintiff, Donald Trump, amended his complaint. And so they said, just serving the new complaints issued after those amendments came in on the complaints took a great deal of time, because you're tracking down 29 parties or their attorneys. And it's making the total complaint 185 pages, and adding additional facts and parties, which likely brought about a number of those aforementioned dismissal motions. Yeah. So we'll see what happens if the court throws it out between now and May.
I'd like to see the reason that they did, that they do. If they throw, well, either way, I'd like to see it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
866-90 Red Eye.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin, and I'm Gary McNamara. Other news out there, jobless claims rise to the highest level since last year. I think the highest in 9 months. The number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits ticked up higher last week, hitting the highest level in 9 months. Figures released Thursday by the Labor Department show that applications for the week ending August 6th rose to 262,000 from 248,000 recorded a week earlier. This is above the 2019 pre-pandemic average of 218,000 claims and marks the highest level since mid November. So,
yeah.
Did any other numbers come out yesterday, or was it just those numbers?
I think it was just those numbers. Yeah.
But when you look over this last week and the numbers that have come out, there has been nothing that's been positive. Even the inflation numbers were not positive.
Right. While better than expected, not great.
And the reason they were better than expected, people can't afford to drive.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the planet, we're Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi. Good morning.
Hello.
Download our Red Eye Radio app today. And if you can't listen to us live overnight, you can listen to us whenever you want.
Yeah.
Well, before we get to what an interesting day it is going to be, the breaking news overnight, actress Anne Heche suffered a catastrophic brain injury in the moments following her crash into a home and as a result is not expected to survive. Plans have been put in place to possibly donate her organs. Her rep says, quote, "It has long been her choice to donate her organs, and she is being kept on life support to determine if they are viable. That's being taken by many media outlets that she is brain dead."
Yeah.
Because there's no other reason that you would keep somebody on life support except to donate their organs in this particular case. Daily Mail saying that Heche's life support will be turned off after the brain dead actress has organs checked for donations. So very sad state of affairs.
It really is.
Very, very, very sad story. You know, you just you shake your head. You shake your head. I mean, just whenever something that you see something this happens, you just say, "What a waste! Didn't have to happen."
Well, and especially because earlier in that day, you know, she appeared on a podcast and you know seemed very much full of life. People talked about what may or may not have been going on in the podcast, whether there was alcohol involved, and there's reports of cocaine being detected and everything else. But, you know, it's sad on many levels, this story, and how a life just ends. Just sad. It really is.
It certainly is. Well, what an evening it was. It was
a day.
Well, the thing is, a lot of people may be waking up right now saying, "I went to sleep at 8:30, and what in the heck's going on?" And of course, before we go any further, did you see Charles Cook's column yesterday in National Review on Trump?
I don't know if I saw that or not. Which one?
Just very, very quickly here, if I can find it, because it was just, I mean, I was laughing the whole time. Bored to death by Trump. Sooner or later, every last thing in America becomes about the former president. It's incredibly tedious. I'm bored of the man himself. I'm bored of his opponents. I'm bored of his supporters. I'm bored of the manner in which every last question that animates our politics is eventually plotted into a graph that has his face at the center. You name anything Trump-related, I'm bored with it. It's utterly inescapable. Before long, every political topic, every prominent politician, every historical trend becomes about Donald Trump in some way, shape, or form. Every piece of journalism does, too. I haven't yet published this piece, and I'm already bored by the responses that it will engender. That's how bad it's gotten. I'm pre-bored by the emails, by the analysis, by the snark, by the desire to make every last thing in American life about Trump. Nothing is safe. Bring up something almost as old as the nation itself, the Fifth Amendment, say, and within a few minutes, people will be debating whether it is fundamentally pro-Trump or anti-Trump. Uh-huh. They'll ask if it's Trump-adjacent or Trump-resistance or anti-anti-Trump, and then without missing a beat, they'll move on to the next topic, that Genghis Khan guy, you know who he reminds us of?
Uh-huh, right.
Trump.
Yeah.
Yes, we know, because this is our politics now. Donald Trump does something, or just as often, someone does something to Donald Trump, and everyone immediately looks down to make sure that they're standing in the correct place on the game board.
Yeah.
Trump said what? Then it must be wrong, or right, depending on your position. Wait, you think it might be a little bit of both? Well, whose side are you anyway? Are you trying to save our democracy? Do you not know what time it is? What about ism? Both side-ism. Tweet if you agree.
Yeah.
Trump broke us, people say. Indeed, we used to talk about ideas, rules, positions, and consequences. Now all we talk about is him. Previous generations argued about slavery or tariffs or free silver or the Interstate Commerce Clause. We argue Trump. And even when we don't, we end up referring to him as if he were the Earth's core. What do you think of the governor of Maryland? Someone will ask, and immediately it's back to Trump. What do you think about the decision on Dobbs? Because you see, Trump did that or didn't do that, if you prefer. Nothing ever will be about what it's actually about because it has to be about Trump. A few years ago, someone told me that my opposition to Trump's position on American libel law was actually driven by my snobbish dislike of his Queen's accent. Me, a guy who was born in rural England, does that even seem likely? Never mind. The whole thing has become disastrously totalitarian. People who disagree with a lot of Trump's political positions now pretend to support them, lest their dissent be cast as disloyalty to the man himself. People who once agreed strongly with the positions that Trump chose to adopt now oppose him vehemently, lest they be accused of alignment with the man himself. During the Trump administration, I was frequently asked by the president's supporters whether I had yet clambered aboard the Trump train. I had no idea what that meant. A blood oath? An agreement to switch off my brain? All of these, I guess, I now see. A similar trend is developing among my progressive friends who have started insisting that I must denounce any politician in America whom they consider to be insufficiently hostile to Donald Trump. No, thank you. I don't think I will. So he just goes
okay.
on and on.
But the last line is the funniest line of all. It is so, so, so boring. And there are still six more years of it to go. Oh, my gosh. That's great. Because it implies that he's going to run in 24 and he's going to win.
Oh, the whole thing is he's all upset that, and that's Charles Cook's column in the National Review. I didn't read the whole thing, but that's
great.
You get where he was going, but my whole thing was, well, you seem to be obsessed with it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Because, you know, we do a talk show and there's been, since he hasn't been president, we have spent a tremendous amount of time on a number of topics that really is about the Democrats being in power, where Trump doesn't actually come into the conversation because he's not president and has no influence over those day-to-day things that go on in government and economics that we're currently talking about. If he was president, he would. But there's the other thing about it. There has not been a politician in the history, and you can look at everything that's going on even right now. There has been no politician in American history, no president in American history that has been as demonized or has had an opposition political party create the enterprise that they did to destroy him early on in his election.
Well, and I would say that, you know, if he's strictly talking about the reaction to everything and response to everything, seems to fold Trump in, then honestly, that squarely lives on the left. Not that there aren't Trump supporters who don't do that. And in a situation like this, in the wake of the Mar-a-Lago raid, of course that's going to be the case. But I mean, in generally speaking, in the current political environment here in the States, I would argue with Mr. Cook, as funny as that was, that the left is making everything about Trump. They make everything. That's their obsession. The Mar-a-Lago raid was clearly about Trump. But I mean, if you're talking generally speaking outside of that, mm-hmm. how they just take everything and make it about Trump, that's their obsession.
And I will say this from doing a conservative libertarian show, not that we don't talk politics more than maybe we did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And not that, and maybe part of it is social media driven and the general mainstream media obsession with demonizing. Remember, Bush was Hitler, too. Mm-hmm. And Al Bush, remember what a great guy he was? You know, no, they demonize to the point everybody's a Hitler. And so we've gotten to the point of the demonization, which, you know, I think just amps up the emotion that exists out there. And, you know, when Trump is a very important part of American history, no matter how you view him. But if you look at, you know, his run, and I still, even though he ran as a Republican, to me, he was still an independent candidate.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have the kind of support that you normally would have, even within a Republican Party, because not of his positions, because his positions were quite moderate, but because of his style,
mm-hmm.
because of his personality style. But his positions were not radical at all when it comes to where Republicans stand. The only thing that might have been radical is there were some, and I think these are some of the Never Trumpers, that would state that they believed in certain issues, but when it came to seriously enforcing those issues, like the border and other things, that at that point they jumped ship, and you found out they really weren't. And we use what's his name for example, Bill Kristol. They really weren't conservatives,
right?
They really weren't. They stated it, but when it came to really doing it, they were not
because their views reshaped. Well, the way that they espoused their views changed on right. more things than just Trump, and that's so. If you're a Never Trumper and a conservative, you still espouse conservative viewpoints. And Bill Kristol clearly revealed himself as a liberal.
But I think that even right now is a perfect example of the influence in Trump. That there are a ton of independents out there. There are a ton of Republicans that look at what is, you know, happened, and you know, the raid of Mar-a-Lago, and they're just blown away by it. And it may not be, you know, Trump is the focal point of it, but it's not just Trump. It's what the Democratic Party is doing. It's an example. It brings people right back to what happened in the first 3 years of the Trump presidency, which was an attempt, which was the Democrats create. And now Republicans know it. They know an enterprise was created to finance and promote a lie about Donald Trump to destroy him, that the 2016 election was not legitimate. It was an enterprise that used campaign money to fund and create numerous lies and present those lies to law enforcement to try to get them to start an investigation. But they were lies, and many people knew inside that enterprise that they were lies. The extent of that Durham is looking into right now is really unprecedented in American history, but more importantly, it's unprecedented to everybody who is alive right now.
Yeah,
nothing right. has ever happened like that. And so Trump is viewed by many as the biggest political victim of a political dirty trick of all time. Nothing comes close. And then you can follow with the impeachment. Then the impeachment, first impeachment happens, and you look at, you know, the fact of Hunter Biden, that Trump was totally legitimate, that the impeachment was completely and totally bogus. We knew it at the time, and we said it at the time, because there were legitimate concerns in the State Department about Hunter Biden. So him asking Zelensky that was fine. It really was. Now, could you say, well, there could be a double meaning because could there have been a double meaning because Biden was going to run for president? Yeah. But their case was the impeachment was there was no national security issue or national security concern whatsoever. And as we know now, that's completely wrong. So you take all of those just in the first few years, the first 3 years of Trump. And there are people that look at it as an attack on Trump, but there are many people that look at it as an attack on the Republican Party and conservatism. So even though they may not want to, Trump may not be their favorite candidate, they sympathize, and now they realize and they believe that they have to unite against what they view as Democrats that wish to be as totalitarian as we've ever seen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I think that's what many Republicans believe, and that's where they are right now. And then this whole thing comes out with Mar-a-Lago, and then last night, the Washington Post, well, this is about nuclear secrets, mm-hmm. and then Trump coming out and stating, no, release everything, not just the warrant, not just what was taken, but everything that backs up that warrant. We want everything released. You're back into the battle again, as is this another case of the Department of Justice not only not doing their job, but is this the Department of Justice and the FBI again attempting to set up Donald Trump and lie about Donald Trump?
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons, because when it's not just Trump, it's what has happened. It's all the behavior of the left towards him.
Yep.
That people view as an attack on themselves. It's not just an attack on Trump. And I think you saw it here, where all of a sudden you've got a ton of people. You even have people on the left. You've got Cuomo. You've got, what's his name from, Mr. Shower Man from Fox. topless in the shower.
Geraldo.
Geraldo, yes. Thank you very much. Geraldo coming out and say,
it's weird that I remember him by that clue.
Same with, well, that's
also
funny.
Weird that you used that clue.
And I couldn't remember his name, but I remembered.
To spur my memory.
Well, because I think somebody...
Can we end the show now?
We came in one night and somebody showed me the picture, and I was like, oh, God, please. Yeah. I didn't need to see that. And it's going to be a fascinating day today. So it's not just about Trump. It's not about the person Trump. It's about everything of where our country is going.
Well, and the fear that the system is failing at the hands of people who are corrupt.
Yes, exactly. And that they have succeeded in a way of taking the person who wasn't corrupt.
Right.
They were corrupt in the first couple of years. They were corrupt in promoting him as corrupt, but they were doing exactly what they were charging him with.
Right. Yep.
And people see it. 866-90-RED-EYE.
He is the latest addition to the National Arboretum's family of bald eagles living along Washington, D.C.'s Anacostia River. And with cameras for online viewing in place at their nest site since 2015, Sue Greeley of the National Arboretum says it's no surprise the male eaglet, known as DC-9, appears to know how to take a selfie.
As he was exploring the nest tree, the cameras have a protective glass dome, and he just hit it with the light and caught a reflection of himself, so he explored the camera. There's some video clips of him sort of pecking at it and tilting his head and sort of looking around, trying to figure out what the reflection was. The camera operators were awesome in catching snapshots of the video, looking at the camera in just the right way, so it does appear that he is taking a selfie.
DC-9 is also media experienced, having been featured in a recent National Geographic special. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up on the bottom of the hour, we will get to what happened yesterday with the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, and what's going to happen today, and then what happened last night, the Washington Post story about this whole thing is about that the president was keeping nuclear secrets.
Mm.
It's just getting so bizarre. And the president responded last night stating, release everything.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I was just thinking that, you know, we've got the weekend, and then we're here Sunday night, Monday morning, and I'm wondering whether on Monday morning, right at this particular time, whether we'll have any more information that we know what happened with the FBI raid on Trump's home in Florida. Whether we're going to have any more information that makes sense. As I told you earlier, this is like National Treasure, and the line in National Treasure, I can't remember who said it, but it was like, oh, here we go again. One more clue, 1,000 more questions.
Well, what's interesting is that the Judicial Watch move, and this happened before Merrick Garland, the AG, made a statement yesterday. Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch had posted from his website the fact that the judge in the Judicial Watch case, which sued to basically unveil the release the warrant information, that happened. Tom Fitton posted that hours before Merrick Garland stepped up and made the statement. And the story, in fact, the case, the court papers, the court documents show that the judge in that case ordered the DOJ to respond to the Judicial Watch case. And the deadline is Monday, August 15th at 5 p.m. So the question is, then the DOJ, or well, Garland comes out and says, I have ordered the court to release information on the warrant.
Yeah. By the way, it's the same judge. Judge that issued the warrant.
Yep, right.
And so that's my point. When Merrick Garland was out there saying they're asking the court to do something, the court already asked him to do something.
That's what I mean. And so the question is...
Yeah, but I just want to make sure people knew it was the same judge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And so, you know, and if Merrick Garland had already, if the Department of Justice had already moved in that manner, then it would make that request by Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch a moot point. So that tells you that they had not moved before the judge ordered it. And then the deadline is Monday at 5 p.m., the 15th at 5 p.m., according to the judge's orders on the Judicial Watch side. But right after Merrick Garland made his statement yesterday, you had a number of legal analysts saying, look, it could be, you know, it could be a number of hours. Jonathan Turley was one of them on Twitter. You know, we might find information out if the court releases it. We might find information out on the warrant within a few hours. Well, that didn't happen. You had, I guess, the closest you got to it, and it really wasn't information from the court. It was a leaked story, a sourced story in the Washington Post saying it was about documents regarding nuclear weapons and top secret nuclear weapon information. So, today, I guess we could learn more information on that. I don't know how quickly they expect that to happen, but Turley seemed to believe yesterday afternoon that it could happen, you know, in as short of a, you know, few hour time period. So it might happen today. We might learn a lot more about the nature of that warrant today, or a ton of it's redacted and we learned very little.
On August 9th, Judicial Watch filed its motion asking the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida to unseal as soon as possible the search warrant materials used by the FBI. Search warrant materials used, not just a search warrant, but materials used by the FBI to raid President Trump's home in Florida. The Albany Times Union and New York Times joined Judicial Watch in filing for the unsealing of the warrant by filing a letter and a motion, respectively. Due to multiple organizations filing to unseal the warrant, Judge Reinhardt further ordered that to avoid the need for individualized orders on any future motions to unseal, it is ordered that the government shall file a response to all the motions to unseal on or before, as you said, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, August 15th. For some reason, I thought August 15th was today. Darn, it's not payday. Monday. So then this was, again, all this was issued before Merrick Garland went out. And all of a sudden, Merrick Garland's asking the court to do what the court is
already ordered him to do. At least in terms of the, you know, the language used by Judicial Watch, that is respond. But if Merrick Garland has already promised, and we know that from yesterday, he said it, to ask the court to release that information, then why wouldn't he respond by releasing that information? I mean, if you want to get into the splitting of hairs here and what a judge order actually entails, and there was a separate suit I noticed when going through the court documents, Tom Fitton provided a link in the story yesterday, but going through the court documents, there's another suit that is separate from CBS News, but I don't know where it stands. I couldn't get any information on that one. But there's a decent chance we might see something today.
Then late last night, Donald Trump issued a statement on Truth Social. Not only will I not oppose the release of documents related to the un-American, unwarranted, and unnecessary raid and break-in of my home, I'm going a step further by encouraging the immediate release of these documents, even though they have been drawn up by radical left Democrats and possible future political opponents. Release the documentation now.
Yeah.
Now, he's not just saying the warrant, and from what sources are saying, he wants the warrant, everything that was taken out of the office, and the affidavit.
Yeah, right.
Which would have the probable cause to do so, especially after the Washington Post came out with their story, now covered by most of the media out there, that this was all about nuclear secrets, which you just start shaking your head saying, what are you talking about? Because the information you get now from the Trump camp is that in June, everything was friendly. Put the lock on the door for the negotiations, fine. Put this special lock on the door, do whatever. They heard nothing. You had Garland come out yesterday. First, the whole thing where he's, and the Democrats do this all the time. The rot, as we have said, the big rot, starts at the top. It's not the average FBI agent out there,
right.
Just like it's not the average CIA agent out there either. It's the rot at the top. That's what has to be cleared out. You need to clear that out. And Merrick Garland is part of that rot at the top. And they try to make it, they always try to do this, you know, this is when they become friendly with law enforcement. When they know the criticism is directed at them, the leadership, they sit there and say, oh, well, the opposition is defaming the good FBI agents and prosecutors out there.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're defaming you.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, no, we're not defaming. We're telling the truth about you. This is on you. And so that was ridiculous. But there's so many questions out there because it's like, well, wait a minute. This was so urgent. You need to get a warrant. Did this happen? Did you find out about this Sunday night? How did you find out about it? Is it still the same as that source story? Did it come from an informant? Did you have an informant? Was there a spy inside of the Mar-a-Lago?
Was it Steven Seagal?
Was there a spy inside? did you have their phones tapped. How did you get this information? Right. Did you find out a week before? And if you found out a week before, why did it take you a week to get in if this is really, really about national security that you could not go through because he claimed they used the least intrusive way, which was a warrant.
Yeah.
But as we have been, as the Trump camp is saying, there was never, nobody ever asked them. They heard nothing. After the June meeting, they heard nothing.
Right.
So did the Department of Justice believe in June that this was going on? Did they believe it a month before, 2 weeks before, that there was this top secret information, nuclear, as Andrew McCarthy wrote, what are you talking about? He's got whatever nuclear secrets that even if it exists in there, he's got it in his head.
He already knows them.
He knows all these secrets. He was president of the United States. He knows it. And so how did, after 18 months, all of a sudden these nuclear secrets that have to be gotten in only by a warrant, not by a subpoena, not by, if this was absolutely critical and you found out and you were sure that there were top secret documents in there that could harm the security of the United States to the point that you have to do something unprecedented, one would think that Merrick Garland would call Trump himself and say, you have these documents, give them to us now, or we're going to have to come in and get them. That never happened from what we know.
Right.
Let's make this where we don't even have to file a subpoena on it. Let's do this off the record. We heard this is there. Do you believe it's there? Because we need to get it, and you do it, and you take care of it like this. You don't wait a week, or you don't wait 2 days. You take care of it like this, and you do it in the way of negotiating. Did that ever happen? Did any of these things happen? They won't answer any questions. They turn around and walk off. They didn't answer any questions for 3 days and then give a quick statement and then take no questions whatsoever.
Right.
Well, why couldn't you have given even the statement that you gave yesterday on Monday?
Why couldn't you do it? And at the end of the day, you at least you've said something, but you say nothing for 3 days.
Right.
And he offered nothing new yesterday. And so this is the problem. They've created way more questions. In fact, the press conference, the statement yesterday left me with more questions than anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it broke everything wide open in this Pandora's box of a 5-minute event. It's like, man, you just opened the door wide to a lot of possibilities, and now you're refusing to ask or answer any questions, and you walk off stage.
And it's so bizarre that you started seeing even people that we view as legit, including ourselves, because we asked it the other day. We went, all right, all the possibilities out there. Trump's trying to set them up. He knew there was an article in Rolling Stone that I was relating to you earlier that's saying Trump has thought for 18 months that they are spying on him. And so with everything he's been through, did he figure they were and said, okay, let's see if we can set him up. Hey, look.
Hey, Melania, you seen those nuclear papers? Where'd I leave them? Are they in your wardrobe? What about the new safe? Do you think they're in the new safe? Where did I put them? Seriously. This whole thing reeks. It smells.
Well, when it came out with his nuclear secrets, I was like, oh, man. I mean, I'm sorry, because it's like, well, where do you go with this? So you're saying it's not about him trying to do anything for any criminal activity at all, unless you're accusing, because this is what happened on social media. The left was accusing him of, and they were trying to make the case that the Saudi tournament that was at, Mar-a-Lago, which it wasn't, that this is all Trump is willing to sell the Saudis our nuclear secrets in order to get more money for them to play at his golf courses.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
Yeah.
Oh, man, so
well, and here's the thing. Not only, as Andrew McCarthy points out, not only does he already know this information clearly, as a former president, Wouldn't you assume that if there were papers like that, that you would make copies of those papers?
Former federal prosecutor, you mean?
No. Trump.
Trump is a former. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. As a former president, he already knows these secrets. They're already up here in his brain, as Andrew McCarthy points out. But also, if you want to go, you know, to the full extent of nefarious intentions, wouldn't he have already secured copies of those documents?
I don't know. Answer the question to me. Why is Trump 18 months after in any way talking or relating to nuclear things?
Why would that be relevant in any conversation at Mar-a-Lago? You know, none of this adds up. None of it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Jobless claims up this week more than expected. The administration said that's a good sign, though, because that means more people will have more time to find the bargains in the stores because they're unemployed and therefore won't have as great of a food bill.
More family time.
More.
Yeah. It's a positive. It's not jobless. They're not unemployed. They're just not working right now.
It better be an interesting day today.
I'm sure it will be.
It better be.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.